earth, quote, constructs an improvement to real estate, unquote, for purposes of Section 16.009 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code. I think in deciding this case, I would urge you first to put the text of 16.009 against the text of 16.008 and compare and contrast the two sections. Keep in mind that these two sections were originally part of the same statute, and 16.008 is the older provision which the legislature had before it when it wrote 16.009. 16.008 provides repose for architects or professional engineers who design or inspect real estate, improvements to real estate, or equipment attached to real estate. And if you compare that with this case, surely if the legislature had intended to grant repose to a manufacturer under 16.009, with 16.008 before it, the legislature would have simply wrote that the repose applies to manufacturers of equipment attached to real estate.
Now, are you talking about what the legislature did in the codification or what the legislature did in its 1975 statute?
In its 1975 statute, it had the provision granting repose for architects and engineers who inspect equipment attached to real estate before it, and it presumably purposely deleted the word equipment attached to real estate from what became 16.009 when it composed that statute. It would have been a simple matter to leave equipment in 16.009 and say that manufacturers of equipment attached to real estate are granted repose. Instead, it deleted that phrase, which to me is very significant, and didn't use the word manufacturer anywhere in the statute, which is also significant. Secondly, even if we view the language of 16.009, or the statute that became 16.009, in isolation, getting to this case involves an extreme stretch of the language of the statute. Now, I'll concede if you take the literal dictionary definition of the word constructs, that might include manufacturing. However, you have to keep in mind that the original statute, which presumably the meaning wasn't changed when they codified it, did not include the word constructs. The word in the original statute was construction. And in construing the statute, you're supposed to apply the ordinary and common meaning of a word. If you go to the person on the street and say construction, I would suggest to the court that what comes to the person's mind is concrete and steel girders, not an assembly line where someone is manufacturing something.
Mr. Hamby, do you concede that the tomato chopper is, in fact, an improvement, as improvement has been historically defined?
No, Your Honor, I do not concede that. That's an issue I was coming to later, but I'll address it now.
You don't need to if you come to it later, but
well,
your argument in your brief seemed to focus on who was supposed to be protected by the statute, and I just wondered if you really didn't give much weight to whether or not this was an improvement.
No, I'm firmly convinced that this is not an improvement for two reasons. First of all, the same argument I just made, contrasting it with 16.008. If something like this were intended to be included in 16.009, surely the legislature would have left those words equipment attached to the real estate in 16.009 rather than deleting it when they composed the statute, because I would certainly concede that this is equipment attached to the real estate, but equipment attached to the real estate has to be something different than an improvement because they dropped equipment out when they wrote this statute. In the second place, this isn't the type of thing that has been historically held to be an improvement. There are two types of things I would submit that have been held to be improvements. Number one, objects that are so firmly attached you literally can't move them without reconstructing the real estate, which there I've cited a number of cases, such as the swimming pool in the Fox Jacobs case, and two items such as the garage door opener in some of the case, whose function is to enhance the real estate as real estate. The function of this object is to chop tomatoes. It's not something such as a garage door opener that actually moves a piece of the structure and is intimately connected with the real estate as real estate, as opposed to something that's used to make tomato puree, which isn't necessarily something that has to be attached to the real estate in order to perform the function as such. But to answer your question, no, I firmly do not concede that the tomato chopper was even an improvement, and that's part of the question that's before you for the Fifth Circuit. Furthermore, if we take a more general view of this situation, what the defendants want you to do is hold that in 1975, the legislature created a statute of repose for products liability cases. Now, it's my understanding that in the past 3 or 4 weeks, the U.S. Congress has indeed, after lengthy debate, created a statute of repose on products liability cases. But if we go back to 1975, that wasn't an issue on anyone's mind back then. And if you go through all of the legislative history, there's no debates whatsoever about creating a statute of repose for products liability cases. And furthermore, the distinction that the legislature would have drawn in creating this product, this statute of repose for some product liability cases back in 1975, simply doesn't make any sense. They want you to believe that the legislature created a statute of repose where whether a defendant gets repose or not depends on whether someone else has taken a bolt and bolted their device to the real estate in some manner. Now, whether the device is bolted to the real estate or not, or attached to the real estate, doesn't strike me as being relevant to the policy behind a statute of repose. Whether it's bolted to the real estate doesn't affect whether the witnesses are still available, doesn't affect whether the manufacturer still has its records and other evidence available from which it could prepare its defense. The act of whether it's attached to the real estate or not simply has nothing to do with whether it's a good policy or a bad policy to have a statute of repose in this situation. Yet, if we read the statute the way the defendants have to urge that it's read in order to prevail, that's exactly what the legislature has done. They've created a statute of repose on products liability cases, and it applies, the application of the statute depends not on some factor that's relevant to the policy behind statutes of repose, but on a completely irrelevant factor, whether the product has or has not been attached to the real estate.
Would you make a distinction between a mass-produced product and something that is built in to the real estate that is a different configuration?
I believe one of the amicus curiae has urged the court to draw a distinction between a mass-produced object, or not necessarily a mass-produced object, but a generally produced object, and one that's produced specifically for incorporation in a specific piece of real estate by, it's designed and built just for that piece of real estate. That is an interesting theory, but it's not really one that's presented in this case. The burden to prove their defense was on the defendants, and as the amicus brief points out, there's a dearth of evidence supporting a theory that this was specially prepared just for this real estate. And the question asks whether a manufacturer, which contains an implication of a mass-produced object, is So for purposes of this case, I believe the court is answering a question relating to a mass-produced object, and the issue of specialty device isn't something you need to decide here.
My understanding of the underlying purpose of the statute of repose has always been that it was there to protect those who were in the business of constructing some sort of edifice, some sort of structure on a piece of real estate, to protect them from virtually undetectable faults that might exist in the construction itself, so that after a period of time, after a period of usage, they could no longer be held liable, not to protect individuals who might manufacture or install machinery that is accessible and the defects of which are repairable and discernible and which is susceptible to some ordinary maintenance. Would that be a correct interpretation of the underlying purpose for these statutes?
I would tend to agree with that.
In other words, an architect or engineer can design a construction of some kind, can be involved in overseeing the construction of some kind, can provide materials and construct it. Once it's built, any existing defects might be totally undetectable. It was to protect them against those things that were undetectable.
After the passage of 10 years, it was, I agree, Your Honor, and I agree that's a good argument for my case that I haven't made in my brief, that this tomato chopping machine is where it can be inspected.
You can pick it up and move it around and bolt it down and unbolt it and move it around again. It's a piece of machinery.
That is what it was, Your Honor. And in fact, my client was engaged in the process of inspecting it when he was injured or performing maintenance on it, which it's much more readily easy to perform maintenance on an object of this kind than on something that's really an improvement to real estate or a structure or something of that nature, because there can be hidden cracks and things in a structure that are not readily detectable. Before my time runs out, I'd like to briefly address the third issue that's hidden in the certified question that came from the Fifth Circuit. The facts of this case are quite complex. Back in 1965, the tomato chopping machine was sold to the TDC. They installed it on real estate at the Sugarland Central unit of the TDC back in 65. The earliest direct evidence about its whereabouts comes in 1980, where we have witnesses saying it's still at the Sugarland Central unit, although no one can swear it's always been in the same location at the Sugarland Central unit during those 15 years. And then along about 1985, the TDC, I don't know whether they closed down the process at Sugarland Central, but regardless of that, they take this tomato chopping machine, they disconnect it from the real estate, they move it to the Ramsey 3 unit, and reinstall it on the Ramsey 3 unit, which is a completely separate piece of real estate some miles from the Sugarland Central unit. And my client gets injured in 1990 after it's been only 5 years at the Ramsey 3 unit. The repose that's granted by the statute has to be within 10 years after substantial completion of the improvement. And real estate has always been treated in the law as unique. So the improvement at Sugarland Central has to be a different improvement than the improvement at Ramsey 3. The 10-year statute of repose had not run against the improvement at Ramsey 3, which was the improvement, if this was an improvement, which caused the injury. And I would suggest to the court that that perhaps is the simplest way to decide this case.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from appellee.
May it please the court, Mr. John Whitmire will be providing a rebuttal.
respond to my question to the other side regarding the underlying purpose for the statutes of repose?
The statutes of repose in general or this particular one?
Well, this particular one, okay. But in general.
Okay, in general, well, I think the statute of repose is different from a statute of limitations in that after a set period of time, the cause of action is destroyed. It's done away with. It no longer exists. In this particular case, some of the legislative history indicates that it had to do with the construction industry.
Why would it eliminate a cause of action after a period of time? What's
the rationale?
Yeah.
The rationale is to put an end, generally speaking, is to put an end to certain fact situations. I think it's a matter of public policy, given the fact situations. This particular statute of repose, I think the overriding factor is that those involved in the construction industry do not have access to the building or the improvement, as the case may be, as opposed to possibly a component part manufacturer. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. A component part manufacturer, the cases and the reasoning is that they have more ability to have better quality control of their product. They make 18 million widgets. Whereas if you're dealing with real estate, you may have specific design plans for a building. As far as an improvement go, that may be a specialized type of chattel that becomes an improvement for a building, such as we had in this case, a tomato chopper for a cannery. In this case, the TDC gave specific request and dimensions for this tomato chopper, and the record indicates that construction was going to begin and would be completed within 5 or 6 weeks, which lends itself to the conclusion that this tomato chopper was not simply pulled out of storage somewhere and sent to Texas. It was constructed, it was built, which falls within the purview of 16.009. But getting back to your basic question, I think the construction industry or business not only involves contractors, building contractors, home contractors, general contractors, it also includes contractors such as our clients in this instance who construct an improvement to real property as defined by the Act. Because there's very few buildings that go up that don't involve a construction of improvements. My clients are pretty much in the same boat as the, say, the general contractor that might build a building, because they come in, they've given some specs, they do the job, and then they're out of the picture. Now, they might be called back to service, theoretically, their product, but the same might hold true for the engineer that designed a building, if you refer back to 16.008. So, in summary, to your question, Your Honor, I think the purpose is to put an end to exposure in the building industry. And I think that an entity that constructs an improvement to real property is within the purview of the Act, which encompasses the entire construction industry.
What about, you mentioned that this tomato chopper was for use in a cannery.
Yes, sir.
How do you distinguish this from the Conkle against Builders Concrete case, which did not envision this kind of protection for component parts?
Well, this is not a component part. It was stipulated in the record that my client made the entire tomato chopping machine. That's not
I'm talking issue. About the machine. The machine is part of the system. It's not the entire system. Isn't that correct?
Well, That's never been raised in the case, Your Honor, where the allegation is against the tomato chopping machine. It is a machine which is affixed to the realty by various means, bolts, conduit, pipes, electrical wiring, etc. But there's been no allegation by the plaintiffs that the cannery was defective. It's basically a products case against this machine itself. Now, the distinction between our situation and Conco is in Conco there were fact issues as to whether or not the bin was an improvement, first of all, which is required by the Act, and secondly, was it a component part versus an entire entity? There were fact issues on that point. In our case, the jury, not the court, but the jury decided that this was an improvement. And they were properly instructed on the law of the state of Texas as to what constitutes an improvement. And it was stipulated that it was not a component part, but the entire machine. So that's the difference on that point, as I see it.
Let me ask you a question. Do you, would it make any difference to your argument if the TDC had sent you specs for a tomato chopping machine and their crew had come out and picked up the machine from your premises and taken it back to the cannery and installed it? Would there be a different outcome in this case?
No, sir. Not in my view.
It is not relevant to, in your view, that it was constructed by somebody as a part of construction of the real estate. If it gets attached to real estate, no matter who puts it there, that then gives statute of repose.
Right. By definition.
So the notion, one of the hypotheses was the microwave, that's a countertop
right.
Microwave. In your view, I plug that into my house current, and I build a nice little cabinet around it. In your view, there's a 10-year statute of repose on that machine.
Well, I think the issue, the key issue, is whether or not it's an improvement. Now, in that amicus brief, there was a little footnote that says, well, just assume it's an improvement. That's a big issue that's usually a fact issue for the jury. And if it is decided that it is an improvement, then I would say yes, under the clear wording of the statute, it would apply. But that improvement is a big issue.
What do you, based on the traditional in definition of improvement in Texas, or let me ask you, do you say that really is the key to this?
Yes.
Is there evidence under Texas law that this is improvement? If it is, then that ends the inquiry.
In this case?
Yes.
Yes, sir. That was the only issue that was submitted to the jury. That was the only, it was stipulated that it was not a component part, that it was one machine, that we manufactured the whole machine, that there was
So what do you consider to be, since we submitted to the jury, you figure there's a fact issue, what is the evidence that you say is the evidence that that the jury can rely on to find that this is an improvement?
Okay. First of all, the prime factor is the intent of the people who installed it by case law. That's the prime factor. But other factors can be examined. Number one, in no particular order, but what was the manner in which it was affixed?
Is that the intent of the owner or the intent of the person who's installing it? Or
the cases say the person that installed it. I presume that would relate to the owner, though, if some third party was hired to put it in. In this case, there was evidence from the TDC that the intent was that it would be a permanent fixture to the realty. Another factor is the enhancement of the property. Here we had a tomato chopper, and this seems to be glossed over, but this is a tomato chopper in a cannery. I mean, without the tomato chopper in the cannery, the value of the cannery is greatly reduced.
Is this a new cannery at the Ramsey unit, or is this an existing cannery that they decided to move the tomato chopper into to improve that cannery?
When the tomato chopper was first purchased, The evidence is that the cannery had been in existence for roughly 30 years, I believe.
But that's the original structure.
Right, that's the original structure.
When it was moved to the Ramsey, what about it?
When it was moved to the Ramsey unit? The Ramsey unit, I believe, was a new unit.
And so this was a new cannery that they were putting in at that unit, and they decided to take this old equipment and move it into the new cannery.
That's my understanding.
Then how do you answer the argument that it's an improvement to the Ramsey unit and it's only been there 5 years?
Well, the statute of repose destroys the cause of action 10 years after the date of substantial completion. That was sometime in 1965.
I'm having a real hard time seeing a piece of portable equipment as a structural improvement or improvement to a structure which becomes a part of the structure. And this is what we're basically talking about, isn't it? We're not talking about a window unit that you can put in and take out or something like that. We're talking about something that literally becomes a part of the structure. So the structure would have to be possibly damaged or marred or somewhat destroyed itself in order to move it out, such as, you know, an elevator. You got to go in and tear out walls and stuff to take an elevator out.
Well, that's just evidence, Your Honor. Some of our courts of appeals have held that a garage door opener is an improvement as a matter of law, although it can easily be just taken off, taken to the next house or whatever.
No, we're here to decide whether they did that right.
Right. Well, I'm just saying that the cases that I've read that interpret improvement say that the issue of portability is just one issue. In fact, the instruction that was given to the jury, if I could just read one part of it, said in part,
in other words, you build a building and all the component parts of that building that become a part of the structure are entitled to the protection of the statute of repose. If there's a defect and it's not detected for 10 years, then there's immunity from any liability for the design, the construction, any defects in structural defects that could not be readily discerned. But here you have a piece of equipment that after it stays in one place for, 20 years, I guess?
25.
Well, in one place, but it was moved, wasn't it? 20 years. And then it's picked up and moved to another place. I have some difficulty because this is not a part of the structure. It's not a structural defect. It has not become a component part of the structure. It's something that's bolted down, picked up, taken over, bolted down somewhere else.
Well, Your Honor, Section 16.009 says in part, when it talks about the 10 years, it says after substantial completion of the improvement and an action arising out of the defective or unsafe condition of the real property or a deficiency in the construction.
So did they tear down the structure in Sugar Land?
Did they tear it down?
Yeah, I mean, did they have to tear it down to get this thing out of there? Or?
Well, in part, they had to disconnect all the conduit, take out the bolts. It weighs about 2,000 pounds, I believe. I mean, the building wasn't knocked down to get it out. But a substantial alteration of the premises had to be performed in order to move it. You couldn't readily move it while it was in place or all the configurations of the conduit and the whole process of the cannery would be altered. It's not something that you could just move over here or move over there. It was in place. The same Judge Gibson at the trial court had a good analogy, I think. It's not in the record, but just for hypothetical purposes. Henry Ford builds a assembly plant in 1900, and in 1935 decides to move the whole plant somewhere else and reconstructs it. Should the statute of repose start all over again?
It's a new plant.
Pardon me?
It's a new plant, is it? Well, you don't pick up a plant and put it on the back of a truck and move it over and set it down. You go rebuild somewhere else.
But the point is, my clients didn't make the move. We're out of the picture. It's the same thing, the same argument could be made for the architects and engineers.
I have a hard time taking this out of the context of the product liability because your clients didn't install it. They didn't bolt it down either, did they?
That's not required by the statute. It's our view that the
plant... And if it's been set on the floor on an apron of some kind and not bolted down...
It is bolted.
But say it wasn't. Say it wasn't bolted down. It was set on the floor on some kind of an apron with a cushion or something like that to avoid vibration. And they set it down and they plugged it in and they hooked up the conduit and stuff like that, the piping that was necessary. But if it wasn't bolted down, then it wouldn't be an improvement. I mean, you plug in a refrigerator, that's not an improvement. It's an appliance.
Right, right. It gets to the question of what constitutes an improvement, which gets back to an earlier question, which I feel was the guts and is the guts of the whole case, which was decided by the jury.
But your opposing counsel made a comment a moment ago that, you know, that this is whether or not something is an improvement that's going to be entitled to protection of the statute of repose going to be dependent on the whim of some third party who decides to bolt or not bolt it down?
Well, I disagree. I think it goes to the nature of an improvement. This piece of machine could not function unless it was an improvement. You couldn't just sit it out somewhere and turn it on like a refrigerator. This was intended to be an improvement to realty by its very nature.
Can I ask you about the whether or not this improvement question is one of fact or of law? You've read, I mean, obviously, you thought there was a factual component, so you all submitted this issue at the trial court. But the Fifth Circuit seems to be asking us this question, a fresh question, a law question. You've read the cases in Texas law. What is the factual component within the legal issue of whether something is an improvement or not?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, my recollection serves me correctly, we did move for finding as a matter of law that this was an improvement, but Judge Gibson submitted it to the jury.
Did both sides believe this was a legal question based on the uncontradicted evidence that was adduced at trial?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Did both sides think this was a legal issue and the judge decided to submit it?
I think that the defendants also made a motion that it was not improvement as a matter of law. Yes, sir. But when we tried the case, the only issue was whether or not it was an improvement. And I think that some of the facts that supported submission to the jury was the fact that it was ultimately deemed portable by the very facts of what happened, that it was moved to another plant some 20 years later.
In the Texas cases you've read, have there been jury issues on this matter?
Yes. Right offhand, I think of Conkle, that this court says that there was a fact issue as to whether or not the bin was an improvement. I don't know exactly how that was submitted to the trial court, but the court recognized there that was a fact issue. I believe it's the Johnson versus Icehouse case, where one of the Houston Court of Appeals felt that there was an issue as to whether or not the equipment was an improvement based upon the fact that it was later moved to another building. In fact, sold, I believe.
Before you run out of time, we got through, and the intent of the people who installed it, you assume that means the owner, you have the enhancement to the property. Are there any other elements of what constitutes an improvement and what you consider the key, I mean, the critical fact that was produced
on that element?
The Karras case sets out the factors, Your Honor. Number one, the mode and sufficiency of annexation, either real or constructive. Two, the adaptation of the article to the use or purpose of the realty. And three, the intention of the party who annexed the chattel to the realty. And the cases hold that intent, the intent of permanency, is of prime importance. Here in this case, there was testimony to that effect. The tomato chopper was carried on the records of the TDC as a fixed asset for 20 years. The adaptation of its use to a cannery, obviously that was to be permanent for the cannery. And the mode of annexation, the record is replete with how it was bolted down, the conduit, the metal tubing would have to have been altered to move it or change it. Lengthy testimony in the record about that. All of these substantiated the jury's finding that it was an improvement.
Any other questions?
If I might make one
concluding... Your time has expired. So I don't have to ask.
Could I make one concluding remark?
Your time has expired.
If you were given extra time, what would you ask?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
If you were given a moment of extra time, what other question would you ask?
I would just point out that our case law, since Ellerbee, has not been challenged by the legislature. And if the state of Texas was construing this statute improperly, why hasn't the legislature changed it?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Mr. Hanby, that seems to be a significant concern about this. Apparently has been how the courts, appellate courts, have been looking at it in Texas. How come the legislature hasn't? I mean, should we give consideration of the fact the legislature hasn't?
The appellate courts have been divided since day one. If you compare Ellerbee, which really doesn't hold what they're saying it holds, with Red X, which is decided, I believe, in the same year, it's really difficult to reconcile those two cases. I don't think you can gather much from a presumed legislative intent from not changing the law when the law has never been clearly set forth in the appellate decisions, particularly when these are intermediate courts of appeals and the real presumption applies when you decide and construe a statute and then the legislature doesn't amend it or not. But Ellerbee at one point...
But isn't Deadman out of the Fifth Circuit pretty critical in some respects of where Texas law seems to be? Doesn't it kind of bring all this stuff together and...
Deadman brings all the stuff together and concludes very reluctantly, I might add, that under the Tom Erie Railroad case, that they had to follow the intermediate courts of appeals, which were squarely on point with the Deadman case. I believe the Deadman case was an in-house heater, which there was square holdings on exactly the same fact issue that they had to follow. But I've never heard of any case from you or anyone else saying that because the Fifth Circuit construes a statute, there's a presumption that they're right because the legislature didn't amend it. That would be new law you were completing.
If that were the case, we wouldn't have this question before us today, would we?
No, you would not.
Counsel, is this a fact issue or a legal question?
I believe it's a legal question, Your Honor. Both sides moved for a directed verdict. The judge denied both directed verdicts and submitted the case to the jury. The key case that you need to review on that issue is the Logan v. Mullis case, which is cited in Appellee's brief. It's 686 Southwest 2nd 605. There you say basically that whether it's an improvement or not can be a fact question, but it's a question of law when the facts are undisputed. The manner in which the nature of this tomato chopper, the manner in which it was attached, was not a matter of conflicting testimony in this record. It's bolted to the floor in a certain way. It's attached to the conduits in a certain way. It's attached to the pipeline that feeds the tomatoes through it
What do you do with the owner's intent?
The owner's intent, the cases say that the intent is the paramount consideration, but I would suggest...
Why doesn't that create a fact issue?
Because it's not intent in that sense. It's intent in the sense of construing a contract. The ultimate consideration in construing a contract is the intent of the drafter, but that's always a question of law, not a question of fact. It's an intent derived from the four corners of the contract. Similarly, this is an intent derived from the manner in which the device was attached. What was in that guy's mind back in 1965 when he was bolting it to the real estate is not a relevant consideration here. It's what he did to bolt it to the real estate and the manner in which he bolted it to the real estate that is
probably
the
wanted
issue.
To stay put when he was bolting. Redo the work.
Notice I've run out of time.
Are there other questions?
Would it make a difference? Would it make any difference if it were welded to I-beams set in concrete rather than bolted so that it could be unbolted and not cut loose?
Yes, Your Honor. I think it would be closer to being an improvement if it were welded and set in concrete where they had to literally break up the concrete to move it. But once again, you have to contrast 16.008 with 16.009, and I would think it was still equipment attached to the real estate, which the legislature deliberately left out of 16.009. even if it were set in concrete, the tomato chopping machine.
Have you undertaken any research on whether there have been attempts to amend this statute since 1975 and in light of any of the federal or state cases?
I have not specifically undertaken any research on it. I don't believe there have been, Your Honor, but I'm probably speaking too quickly because I really haven't researched that.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in this cause, which is submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will please adjourn the court.
Yeah, okay.